my beloved friend Jean. When you know somebody pretty well and you love them so much, what do you say? I'm going to try to keep it to what we're talking about today and what you see happening in front of you is this wonderful conference. And he's been with me since the beginning, and that's why it's still going. Today, we're going to do lessons from hypnosis, better integrating the subconscious mind, hypnosis, and tapping, because I ask him to. And it's going to be awesome. Little known facts, Jean is a hypnosis therapist as well. A hypnosis practitioner, I guess is what I should say. He will tell you more about that if he wants to. Most of you know him from his very large, useful, content-rich site called TappingQ&A.com. As far as I can tell, it's the number one podcast, and it's also the biggest, and you can find just about anything there from anybody. He's done a fascinating job and has many programs there, of which we'll be giving away one of his programs in the next break. Gene also specializes in traveling around the country. He does some events for a very large coach. He also does a lot of events with one of his childhood friends for lots of teenagers, and probably that explains why he puts up with me. Other than that, Gene and I like to drink bourbon. I think that covers it.
Yes, we do, and we do it regularly. Excellent. Okay, so let me share a screen with you all. So originally, I found my way towards hypnosis because I was hanging out in a magic forum, which is a place that I have a tendency to spend some time from time to time. And there was a section, it's called the Magic Cafe, and it's a really comprehensive, fun group of magicians. And there was a section on stage hypnosis. And so I was considering becoming a stage hypnotist just because I found that particular work fascinating. And you can learn how to do an induction. You can learn how to do a stage show in about a day and a half, maybe 2 days. There are workshops all over the country where in a weekend, you can learn how to be a stage hypnotist. And as I was talking to folks who had been in the trade for well more than a decade, they said, you can do that, and it's not going to equip you in case something goes wrong. So you should probably actually go what we would now call a consulting hypnotist, and go get an actual certification in this, just in case something goes wrong, so you are prepared. In the process of doing that, I realized that not only can you do hypnosis for fun, but you can use it for some really amazing transformational work. And I'm a really firm believer that any modality that we can use, if we're tapping with it, we can supercharge that particular modality. So a significant amount of the work that I do, the art of delivery that I do, I've actually drawn a great deal from my hypnosis training. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about hypnosis today and how you, using it for yourself, because I'm actually going to show you a technique that you don't need to be working with someone else to be able to use that I've gathered from this. And then I'm going to talk about some of the art of delivery, some patterns, some rapport building stuff that we can get from hypnosis. And in the middle of this, we're going to break into some small groups. And you're actually going to get a chance to try this out. That's why I wanted you to download the handout, so you'll actually have the little formula to use once you get into your small group. So hypnosis really is nothing more than more focus on less information. That's the first level of it. And I will give you an example of this. What I would like you all to do right now is I would like you to imagine your third grade classroom. And as you imagine your third grade classroom, I want you to imagine approximately where you sat at some point during the year. I'd like you to imagine some of the things that are on the wall. I would like you to imagine some of your friends who were in the classroom, maybe what your teacher looked like. There was probably an American flag if you were in the United States hanging somewhere in the class. Where was that in the classroom? Now, as we did that very simple little exercise, what happened was your attention got more and more specific. And as your attention got more and more specific, you created details. Because when I said think of your third grade classroom, you had a picture of your third grade classroom that came sharper into focus. As you were doing that, all of the other information around you was slowly tuning out. Because we're engaged in something like this, you're already tuning out the background noise and whatever is going on in your house and your environment, much like if we were in a busy cafe having a conversation. So in hypnosis, we're trying to do that in a really specific way. We're trying to get the more focus on less detail, which allows us to do something. The second thing that happens in hypnosis is, in a good hypnosis session, what we're going to do is we're actually going to travel through different levels of brainwave. waves. When we are in a conscious state, our brains are producing a wave at the beta level. As we start to relax, and light state hypnosis is going to happen at the alpha level. And then as we get deeper, we go to theta. Whenever you're having REM sleep, you're actually in theta. That is a time where we can do lots of transformation. One of the theories about dreaming is it's the opportunity for our subconscious mind to sort information out. And so we're at that deep stage. So this is the place, if you can get into deep trance, you can do really powerful work in hypnosis. And we'll talk about why in a moment, because we can actually work with the subconscious mind. Well, one of the things that is really interesting, up to the age of between 5 and 7, we basically live in a theta state all of the time, even when we're waking. That is the reason why if you are learning a language before the age of 6, you learn it so much faster than after the age of 6. And it's the reason why our environmental experiences impact us so much later in life. Because basically, every moment of the day, we're walking around with this open space into our subconscious mind, and the experiences that we're having are getting written directly into that subconscious mind. And so that's why something that is traumatic, and it doesn't have to be a big thing, it just has to be perceived traumatic to us as a small child, shows up in the sessions that we do today with clients, is because that's where we have this direct access to that space. So a hypnotic induction is nothing more than getting someone to focus narrowly on a specific piece of information, using tools of that focus and relaxation to slowly drop from beta to alpha to theta so that we can start doing the transformational work in the subconscious mind. Now, the reason that we have to do this is sitting at the front of the subconscious mind is something that we call the critical factor. It's like a sentinel. It is a guard. And what it is doing, it is making sure that we are not getting direct right access to the subconscious mind all day long. Because if that were the case, if I was listening to the Beatles while I'm cooking and I accidentally cut myself, if I direct right access to my subconscious mind in that moment, then every moment going forward, when I hear the Beatles, I would immediately fear physical pain because those two things just happen to get associated together in a particular moment. So we have it walled off at the front. Now, when we have access to the subconscious mind is if we're in a theta state or we're experiencing something that is absolutely new. If you're experiencing something that is new, then we're learning, and the subconscious mind is a pattern-making machine. It's the reason why when I get into a new rental car, I don't have to think which is the gas and which is the brake. I've driven enough in a car that is driven on the right side of the road in North America that I know where the gas and the brake are going to be when I sit down in that vehicle because that pattern has been created. So when we're creating patterns around new things, we have more access, or if we're experiencing something that is traumatic. And traumatic things happen if they are extreme, unexpected, and isolating. Now, you will notice that all three of those words are subjective. Extreme is objective, unexpected is objective, and isolating is objective. They had this really interesting thing happen when they had the bombings that happened in the UK tube system. When they were trying to figure out who was going to be suffering from PTSD or not, if you could only ask someone who was trapped in the tube during the bombing, you can only ask them one question and then make a determination if they were likely to have PTSD or not. The question was, did you send a text message out and did someone reply? Because if you sent a text message out and someone replied back, you were not isolated. Now, obviously, people were in crammed cars on the tube, but isolation has to do with how we perceive a community. We can be in a very crowded room and still feel completely isolated. Extreme, you know, for a split second, you know, you are a small child, you are in the living room, mom and dad are having a conversation, they're moving the car to the back of the house. Since mom and dad are having a conversation while this is happening, they jump in the car to drive around the house together. 5-year-old inside of the house all of a sudden feels like they've been abandoned because it is unexpected and it is extreme because they don't understand what is going on. It's a subjective experience. And so that's the reason why when we have those things, they become so rooted is because it's bypassing the critical factor and it's getting locked in. So Hypnosis allows us to bypass the critical factor. And if you have been a tapper for any length of time, that you know that tapping going in through the body does the exact same thing, where going in through hypnosis, we're going in through the mind. If you're doing something like theophostic prayer, we're doing the exact same thing where we're bypassing the critical factor, but we're going in through the spirit. We have lots of ways of accessing it, but this is just one particular tool in doing that. So with all of that being said, why am I a tapper and not a hypnotist? Well, the first is, hypnosis typically requires a really particular set of circumstances. Like, normally the person needs to be relaxed, they need to be comfortable, it might need to be in a quiet room, because we're actually getting them to focus in their mind, particularly if they're not super, super, super connected to a meditative practice. That can be a hard thing. I have done a successful tapping session on a Friday night on the corner of 96th and Amsterdam on the Upper East Side. I was walking around with a friend and I was talking about tapping. She goes, can we try that? I'm like, sure, do you want to step into the cafe? She's like, no, let's just do it right here. It would be really difficult. It would take a really high level of rapport to be able to do a hypnosis session in that context. The second thing is, if you are not used to being hypnotized, oftentimes it can take anywhere between 5 and 12 minutes, depending on the skill of the practitioner and depending on the willingness of the client, to actually to be induced deep enough to go into trance. Where with tapping, I can do it right now. The third thing is, we know, and PETA, Stapleton, and a number of other folks have done a lot of great research to show us this, we know that tapping is a mechanical process. That we know when we tap on these points, we can see cortisol levels drop. When we tap on these points, we can see change in the brain in a functional MRI. It does not require the belief of the person doing it. Hypnosis, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. So if you tell me, Gene, you can't hypnotize me, you are absolutely right, because you are the one who is doing the hypnosis. A good hypnotist is going to build rapport, and we'll talk about how to do that. And I'm just the co-pilot. I am just the navigator as a hypnotist. You're the one that actually has to be doing it. For tapping to be successful, we need to stimulate the points, and we need to be tuning into what is going on, and that's it. And so we don't even have to believe it's happening. I just have to be thinking about the pain while I'm providing the tapping, and transformation will happen. So that's the reason why I'm primarily a tapper and I'm not a hypnotist. But I really am doing hypnosis. And this is kind of one of the ditty little secrets, is that doing an induction is giving someone commands and having them follow those commands. And so when you're doing a traditional induction, what you do is you start with really easy things like close your eyes, take a deep breath. And what you're doing is you are training someone to do what you were asking them to do. When you start asking them to do harder things, they trust you. Well, what do we do when we're tapping with someone? Tap on the side of your hand, tap on the eyebrow, repeat after me, think about this. And so what we're actually doing is we're building rapport and we're getting them to do things that follow along. About a decade ago, there was a belief amongst some people in the hypnosis field around tapping is they didn't even think the tapping worked. They thought it was just a hypnotic induction, and we were just using a different type of hypnotic induction. We've now proven multiple times that tapping on particular body parts makes a huge difference, and it's not just the induction and just doing something in hypnotic trance, that there's something mechanical that goes along with the tapping. But at one point, because it was so close to an induction, that's what is going on. And there's something called waking state hypnosis, where we can calm you enough to get a hold of a specific piece, and that's what we're going to talk about today, so that we can transform something that is on the other side of the critical factor without having to go into deep trance, and tapping allows us to do that. So what we're going to do in the 44 minutes that we have left is I'm going to teach you from a hypnosis point of view what parts mediation looks like. I'm going to give you a formula, then we're going to go off and try it, and then we're going to come back and answer some questions. Then, depending on how much time we have left, I have a whole bunch of skills from hypnotic patter that you can use when you're working with clients. And based on the amount of time that we have left, I will share as many or as few of those as we have left of time, just so you can throw a few extra tools into your toolbox. But I wanted to start with the parts piece because this is something that you can use for yourself. You don't have to be working with someone else. Patter is about building rapport and about connecting with someone else. And so in those circumstances, we are actually working with someone else. Not everybody does that with their tapping. A lot of people who are joining us just like to tap on their own. So I wanted to give you the school that was most useful for all of us, and then we'll go on to the one that is useful after that. So you will notice here on the slide, at the lower part there, you will see it says parts work with lowercase, not parts work with uppercase. I'm using the impart proper noun, that there are a number of very specific defined therapies and treatments and protocols that are called parts work and parts therapy. We are not using the proper noun. We are using a more general sense of what that is like. And so I just want to make sure I made that really clear distinction before we jumped in so there wasn't any confusion. So parts work is just, it's a way of isolating a specific part of our experience. And by doing this, we get the opportunity to understand the thing that is not operating in the way that we would like. When I talk about tapping, I always say the goal of tapping is to create a proportionate, well-informed emotional response. So the goal is not to eliminate the emotion. We're just making sure the right emotion is showing up at the right time to the right degree. So for example, if I have a loved one who dies, it is appropriate that I'm gripped with sorrow. That makes 100% sense. If 35 years later, three times a week, I am going to the gravesite, laying flowers and crying for 45 minutes every single time, we might have gotten to the point where I've gotten to a disproportionate response. And there is a very specific part of our experience, of our belief system, of what we're going through that is informing the way that we respond. It is a memory. It is a limiting belief. It is our understanding of the world. And so by thinking of that as a specific part, we can understand what is the work that that part of us is doing. We can discover why it is doing that work. I'm sure all of you have been in a circumstance where you've done the movie technique, where there's this moment in our past which is now causing us to respond to a circumstance in the future or the present because of that. So parts work is a great way to uncover the reason why we're responding the way we do in the moment. And it could be a memory, it could be a limiting belief, it could be something else. And the beautiful thing about the technique I'm going to teach you is the part is going to tell you why it's doing what it is doing or what is informing that particular thing. We'll get to figure out how it's doing that work. So there's a part inside of us that perceives the world in a particular way because of its experience, and it's functioning in a really specific way. So the last presentation we had, Lee talked about all of these things that we could do with social media and put ourselves out there. And she said, what are you scared of? And everybody's like, putting myself out there and being seen in that particular way. So if I'm afraid of putting myself out there, the way the part is doing its work is making sure I'm watching lots of videos of sloths swimming in the Amazon River, because that is the most graceful, beautiful thing in the world. And in troubled times, when I need to calm myself, I reach for cookies and cream, ice cream, or I reach for sloths swimming in water because it just chills me out. So it is working in a really specific way. It is perceiving a danger out there in the world. And so it's functioning by distraction. So that's the way it's doing its work. We also, when we do this sort of work, have the opportunity to transform the part into doing something that is more useful, that is more functional, that is more beneficial. So again, it's not an issue of getting rid of the things that aren't useful. It's making sure that we're having a proportionate, well-informed emotional response to what is in front of us. And the beautiful thing about the little process that I'm going to show you is it's going to unpack each of those pieces of information and then show you exactly how to do the transformation, all while we're tapping our way through it. So why do we use parts? It allows us to take a step back. It's really difficult for me sometimes to understand myself as a whole person, because that is a complicated, messy affair. You do not want to know the things that are bouncing around inside of this head. It's just not something that is useful to be wading into. So if I can take a step back, it gives me the ability to have a little perspective. It gives me the ability only to work on a portion of something. You know, think if you're in a circumstance where you're running a company and something is going wrong. Well, you go to the division or you go to the team that is working on the thing that is going wrong. You don't try and change things at a company level. You go to the place where the problem is. So it gives us the ability to kind of narrow our focus as we are doing that. It gives us the ability to gather information. We are notoriously bad eyewitnesses to our own experience. When a client comes to me and says, this is what I'm struggling with, and this is the reason why I'm struggling with it, I go, great, that is a great piece of eyewitness testimony. And it might be true and it might not be true. Because our brain is built wanting to know why we are the way that we are, so we will write a story that feels true. I am afraid of speaking in public because when I was in fourth grade, I did show and tell and everybody laughed at me. That is a reasonable reason for me to be afraid of speaking in public, but that might not be the reason why I'm afraid to speak in public today. I might be afraid to speak in public today because I'm talking about the work that I do and I'm really passionate about it, and if you don't like it, it's going to feel like it's a judgment to me. And so if I tell you, well, it's because of this thing that happened in my past, we could tap on that issue in the past forever, and I'm not going to get better at public speaking because we're not tapping on the right issue. And so by using the parts to give us the information about what our experience is, we're going to put ourselves in a situation where we're going to be getting the accurate information, not what our conscious mind thinks is the problem, but what we're actually experiencing. And this is a way of giving ourselves some space to allow to do that. The other thing is, it's just so much easier to do transformation in this way. I'm not trying to change the entire system. Again, think of the example of a company. It's so much easier for me to transform what the marketing department is than change the entire company. So by changing something small, it makes it easier for us to do that. And finally, when we transform the part, we transform the system. Now, not every single part impacts every single part of our system. You know, my fear of public speaking might have nothing to do with my issues with my health, but it also might. And when we do work on one area, it ripples through the others. My friend Pamela Bruner, who I work with and I coach in one of her programs, she always says small business ownership is the graduate school of professional development. Because when we are having to do these tasks and we are having to put ourselves out there in that particular way, we have to deal with our sense of worth and value and are we being worth of heard and the actions that we need to take and perfectionism. And so we, by necessity, have to do the work on ourselves. And that's one of the reasons why I love working with small business owners is because we transform the part, we transform the entire person because those issues are showing up in lots and lots of different places. And so it gives us the ability to work on the micro that in many cases can impact huge parts of the macro as we're navigating all of this. So what are the types of parts that we can work with? So the first type of part is a short-term part. And what I mean by a short-term part is something that comes up in the moment in a session. It could be a memory, it could be a physical sensation, it could be an emotion. So I am thinking about putting things on social media and I get a tightness in my chest. Awesome. That's a little part. It is a physical sensation and an emotional sensation in response to something that I am doing. And so we can isolate the emotion, the physical sensation. I'm sure lots of you have done guided imagery where you've had a conversation with a tightness or a heaviness or something like that. And so that becomes a part, short term in the moment. Now, it can come back again and again and we can feel it all of the time, but it gives us the ability to kind of hem it in a small way. System or task parts. You know, systems could be my physical self, my intellectual self, my emotional self, my digestive system, my heart, my respiration, that we can tune into those things and isolate them in the exact same way. One of the most popular podcasts I've ever done was something that I call the grounding process, where we spend time with your physical self, your intellectual self, your emotional self, and your higher self. And so we're like they're not really lines between those four things. We know that, but they become categorizations that give us the ability to gather information and to provide transformation in a smaller way that then ripples through the bigger part. Age parts. I do lots and lots and lots of childhood work. You know, when you feel this emotional sensation, how old do you feel? 6. Awesome. I want you to imagine your 6-year-old you. So now what we've done is we've taken the whole person, but we've isolated them to a snapshot in time, which gives us the ability, again, transforming this moment gives us the ability to transform the entire part. Okay, so characteristics of parts. And I know I'm cruising along really, really fast, because what I want you to do is I want you to have an opportunity to play with this, because you're going to have a high enough level of understanding that as you play with it, you already know how to do this. You do this all of the time. I'm just giving you a little structure to make it easier to do. So characteristics of parts. They're trying to be helpful. Every single part of your system is trying to do something that is helpful for you. The part of me that is preventing me from posting about my business on Facebook is trying to keep me safe of judgment and ridicule and rejection. I was one time working with a client who was wanted to launch a podcast. And I said, great, you haven't done anything yet. What are you afraid of? She said, what happens if no one listens? Pause. What happens if people listen? Now, those are two different parts that are trying to keep her safe. There's one part that's afraid, I'm going to put something out there and I'm going to be ignored. And there's another part that's saying, I'm going to put something out there and everybody's going to notice it and they're going to judge it. So now I have two belief systems that are getting in the way because they're trying to keep me safe. One is trying to avoid the judgment of being ignored. The other is trying to avoid the judgment of being seen. So they're always trying to be helpful. Just, you know this from the people in your life. There is a lot of incompetent, well-meaning help offered to us. And oftentimes, that's what our parts are doing. They are well-meaning and competent, showing up trying to keep us safe when they're not actually keeping us safe. They feel like they must do their job. Our parts do not take a day off. It is not like I'm afraid of speaking 5 days a week, and on the weekend, all of a sudden, the part that's afraid of speaking goes on vacation in South Florida. They are ever present, and they are always on guard. And if they are fear-based, fear always wins. That's the reason why, as a species, we are alive. If I'm standing in the street and a car is bearing down on me, I don't stand there and think, ooh, 67 Mustangs. I love 67 Mustangs. The fear wins. And so if there's a part of you that is afraid of something, it is persistent and it will always be there. It operates from the place it thinks they know what is best for us. Again, the part that is preventing me from posting about my business and social media is trying to take care of me. It truly believes it is doing what is best for me. Now, it's not, but it's motivated from that place. And as you'll see, as I teach you the little formula that I like to use, when we recognize these characteristics, it makes it so much easier to work with them and transform them as we are doing this. And the last part is, they're often completely unaware that there are other parts in our system trying to keep us healthy. So the part that is preventing me from posting online doesn't realize that there's another part of me that is getting good coaching on social media and how to put myself out there in a way that is being helpful. And there's another part of me that is trying to bring my giftedness forward and I can be a transformational act in the world, that it feels isolated. So when we recognize it's trying to be helpful, it has to do its job, it's operating from it thinks it knows best, and it often is thinking it's alone, that gives us the perfect window into how we can start working with these parts and give it a try. So the reason why parts do not serve us well. First of all, they're trying to solve problems that aren't actually problems. So 7,000 years ago, if you were pushed outside of the tribe, you died. That's not hyperbole. That is a fact. That's why we had tribes. It was to survive. If you got pushed outside of the tribe, you would die. So there's a part of me that thinks if I put something on social media and I get judged, I'm going to be pushed out of the tribe and I am going to die. More than likely, if I put a little infographic up about this week's podcast episode, I'm not actually going to die, even if people criticize me, even if really bad things happen. So it's trying to keep me safe from something that isn't actually a problem. Oftentimes, our parts are fighting the last war. It is using a tool that used to be useful. If I was living in a household with a bipolar parent, I learned very particular skills to navigate coming home from school because I did not know how that bipolar parent was going to respond, regardless how I walked in the door. Now, if I am coming home to a spouse and I'm operating out of that way of taking care of myself, and I now have a loving, nurturing, deep, passionate relationship with a partner, if I'm using the tactics from keeping myself safe from a bipolar parent to another figure in my life, it's trying to keep me safe, but it's not using the right techniques because I'm actually in a different context and I'm a different person as I'm doing that. And then, like we said before, they're isolated and they're trying to do everything. It's fighting so desperately to keep me safe. It is working really, really hard because it thinks it is absolutely alone in its efforts to take care of me. And sometimes it's trying to solve an unsolvable problem. So right now, like one of the things that I've been talking about a lot is that we have been dealing with what I'm calling a 20% energy tax. Because of the amount of uncertainty in the world, the first thing that we do when we wake up in the morning is we take 20% of our energy and pay it in a tax to manage these uncertain times. And our system does a really bad job with uncertainty. And so my internal fight, flight, freeze, and fog mechanism is trying to solve the problem of a global pandemic. I'm a really, really talented person. I have really well-resourced parts, and my fear system can't actually solve a global pandemic by itself, as far as I'm aware of at this particular moment. I'm open to that as a possibility, but at the moment, it doesn't feel like that's the case. And so if my fear part is trying to keep me safe from something and a problem I can't solve, then I'm wasting all of this energy and I'm wasting all of this internal resource and attention towards something it can't actually transform. So if we have a part that is trying to solve something that isn't a problem, that is using tactics that aren't useful, that is trying to do it all alone, or is trying to solve a problem it can't solve, you can see how it would make difficult to navigate particular things and take the choices that we want. And the last part is it just overfunctions. You know, it is building a 30-foot wall for 6.5 inches of water. Like, I don't want to be in a circumstance where I'm careless and reckless in the way that I represent myself online and in social media. The first 3 years of my practice, it was embarrassing because I didn't have an editor. Like, I was so laissez-faire about the stuff that I was publishing, I looked really unprofessional because my dyslexia was showing more than my actual competency. So it's good that things are trying to keep us safe, but if I spend 18 weeks on a 500-word blog post, that's an over-functioning way of trying to keep myself safe. So it's doing the right thing, making sure I'm presenting myself in the world in the right way. It's just working way too hard. And then sometimes we're just misinformed about the danger. If I walk through my kitchen and a mouse runs across the floor, and I jump on the table and I scream like a 5-year-old, there's not actually danger there. So it's trying to keep me safe from something that isn't actually dangerous. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run through the process with you at a high level. I'm going to do a quick demo of it, and then I'm going to shoot you off into groups so you guys can play with this yourself. So it's a very simple 7-step process. This is what it looks like. Step 0, just start having them tap. Tap, 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 tap. I'm always fascinated, and I fall into this whole myself. Sometimes I'll work with a client and I go, okay, great. So describe your problem to me. And they describe their problem. I'm like, okay, so now what I want you to do is I want you to start tapping. Well, if you're describing the problem, you're already tuning into the issue. Why aren't we tapping while you're describing the problem to me? Because you're tuning in and tapping and we're getting relief. So when we do something like this, we just tap the entire time. Now, if I'm leading someone through the process, I'll give them instruction. But if I'm working with someone who's tapped before, I'll say something simple as, while you're describing what's going on, just tap on your collarbone. Or, as the old Yellow Pages used to say, let your fingers do the walking. What I want you to do is start at the tippy top of your head, and every few sentences, just move on to the next tapping point. So we're tapping the entire time. So now what we do is we tune into an action that we want to take. So I want to call someone, invite them to dinner. I want to publish something on the website. I want to pursue a degree. I want to leave a relationship. Tune into the action that we want to take. Now, as we start tuning into it, our mind and our subconscious mind starts connecting to it and starts activating it and starts living it out. And so we're immediately going to start getting some sort of response to what is going on. So step two is notice where the resistance is showing up. This is what's ultimately going to be our part. Now, it can show up in lots of ways. It can show up as a physical sensation. Tightness in the chest, butterflies in the stomach. It can show up as a chattery brain. Like all of a sudden there's like all of these, oh, you can't do that, it won't happen. Sometimes it's something that we experience outside of us. It feels like a wall that is in front of us, something that is pushing us down, something that is holding us back. I've had lots of clients have it show up as something that is standing next to them, hectoring them and making fun of them. So it doesn't matter how it shows up. Now, when I am having someone describe that, what I like to do is I like to use the rule of three, where I give three examples of possibility, with the third one being wacky, to give them permission to say whatever they want. So, okay, so you feel nervous. Does that show up as a tightness in the chest? Does it show up as butterflies in the stomach? Or does it show up feeling like your skin is trying to crawl off your body? The reason why I do this is because if I say, oh, you feel nervous. Is it tightness in your chest, butterflies in your stomach, sweaty palms? Well, I'm giving you three culturally normative ways to be nervous. Therefore, you're going to give me an answer to make me satisfied because you're trying to appease me as a practitioner. If I give you something that is wacky, then you're going to have free rein. Is it tightness in the chest? Is it butterflies in your stomach? Does it feel like someone is trying to fill your entire chest with a pork product? Like just something that makes absolutely no sense at all, but to give them permission to let them describe it however they are describing it. Because when it might be something that is common. Nerves are often butterflies. Self-esteem issues often show up as tightness in our solar plexus. Shoulds often show up in our shoulders. But I also don't want to lead a client into doing something where they're trying to make me happy. So I want to give them something that is outside of the box. Tuned into the issue, figure out where it's showing up in the body. Step three, now we're going to start asking questions of the part. So whatever they describe, outside the body, inside the body, inside of their head, that is the thing that we're going to treat as a part. And from this point forward, we are going to act as if that has agency. So again, we're getting out of our conscious mind. And you can see clients try and figure something out. And I'll go, no. I don't want you to intellectually figure it out. Ask the butterflies in your stomach. And so these are the questions that I like to ask. What are you afraid of? What do you think is going wrong? What proof do you have? How are you trying to keep me safe? And so when you do that, they're going to start saying, people are going to judge me, or we might get a memory, or we might get a social construct. Sometimes simply voicing the reason why we have what is going on, the intensity immediately goes down. Sometimes it doesn't change at all. Sometimes it actually goes up because we're tuning in. But no, it is not uncommon for change to happen at that point. But now we've been given all of this information. Well, if I publish this online, people are going to write really nasty comments under my video. Now, I've had clients say that all the time. I had people talk about that in the chat session when Lee was just on, talking about how horrible it can be for trolls online. There's something that does that. Okay. Step four, again, tapping, talking to the part and tapping. Thank the part. I really appreciate the fact that you're working so hard to keep me safe. I really appreciate the fact that you perceive this danger in the world and you're doing everything in your power. Again, going back to how parts operate, they're operating from a place where they think they are keeping us safe in the best way possible. If I affirm the part in its intention, not in its action, not in its outcome, I'm making it my ally. Because if I'm trying to wrestle a part of me into submission to act a different way, I have this internal conflict with what is going on in my system. If I get out of the way and I let the part do its thing and I say, I really appreciate the effort you're doing. I've made the issue my ally. because I'm affirming the parts of it that I can affirm. Tune in, figure out where it is in the system, ask it questions, affirm it. Step 5, solve the problem. Pretend that this is an employee that's working too hard. Give it information. Did you know if you actually put stuff online, most people are going to ignore you and the people who are really going to resonate are going to like it? And if someone puts a nasty comment, you can delete it. So basically what you do is you now just pretend you have a friend who said these things out loud and you're just giving reframes and coaching advice. Or you give it a skill. Ask the part. Okay, so you realize that this is what's going on. What skill or resource do you need to be more effective at this? And we go and we empower it and we give it that skill to give it a try. Give it access to other parts. Let it know it's not alone. Did you know I also have this part of me that's trying to keep me safe and this part? And oftentimes, I actually bring them all together around a conference room table and we have a conversation with these different parts. So it's no, it's not alone. Ask the part, what does it need? I was working with a client one time and we were dealing with something in the chest and the image was a waterfall. And I'm like, so what does this part need to be healthy? And the client pauses for a second. She goes, Bruce Willis from Die Hard. Awesome. Great. Bring that in. I actually had one client who taught his part how to tap. And so he literally did a little tapping workshop for this little bitty part inside of him. So the little part inside of him, whenever it got overwhelmed, it would start tapping before it got worried. And so all we're doing is we are now treating the part as if it was a client, as if it was an employee, and we're resourcing the part. And again, by dealing with it apart, we've disassociated from the client's mind or our own mind. Again, we can do this to ourselves and transform the part, transform what is going on big. Now, step 6, have them tune in and imagine taking the action again. So if the action is, I want to post something online, then we get a little nervous. Then what we're going to do is we're going to go back to step 3 and we're going to do it again. Now, the sensation might be in the same spot. The sensation might be somewhere else. It might go from fear to worry, whatever it is, but it's just a recursive process. So we start it over, we go back to the beginning, and we work our way through it again. If there is no sensation, then we thank the part for all of its hard work. We let it know if it needs us, and we dive in and we do it again. So, high level again, start tapping, tune into the action we want to take. Notice where the resistance is, ask it information, thank it for being useful, solve the problem, imagine what's going on again, and then give it a go. Okay, so I am looking at the clock, and we have two options here. I want to make sure you have an opportunity to try this. Chime into the chat box if you'd like to see me demo this quickly before I send you off into small groups, or if you, okay. John D, do you want to be a volunteer for me? You need to unmute yourself for me, my dear?
I did.
Okay, great. Awesome. Okay. So, no, go. Tap your collarbone and start tapping for me. Okay. I want you to think of an action that you want to take right now that you're not taking as actively as you'd like.
Okay.
And could you tell me some information? You don't have to give me all the details, but just give me some information that you'd feel comfortable sharing in a large group around that.
Sure. Consistent posting.
Awesome. Okay, great. So what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that you are going to start posting more often. Let's pretend that you're going to post 5 times this week. Great. Now that that I just saw on your face, does it show up there in your face? Is it somewhere else in your body? Where do you notice that?
Yeah, it's probably in my throat.
Great. So I want you to tune into that sensation in your throat. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to intellectually figure this out, but I want you to ask the sensation in the throat, what's it afraid of?
It doesn't like to repeat things.
Okay, great. And ask it, what goes wrong when you repeat things?
It gets bored.
And the part gets bored or the audience gets bored?
The part gets bored.
Awesome. Great. Tap on the side of the hand and just thank the part for trying to keep you safe. And ask it what goes wrong if it gets bored.
First word that came up, frustrated. It gets frustrated.
And frustrated why? Frustrated about what?
So frustrated is leading to technically things go wrong and it gets more frustrated.
Awesome. Great. Tippy top of the head and just move from point to point, repeating after me. I recognize the fact.
Recognize the fact.
That I want to be posting more often.
That I want to be posting more often.
That I want to be sharing information that I know is useful.
And sharing information I know is useful.
And there is a part of me.
And there's a part of me.
That is afraid that.
That's afraid that.
It's going to get really repetitive.
It's going to get really repetitive.
And it's going to be boring for me.
And boring.
Because I really enjoy new ideas.
I really enjoy new ideas.
And the last thing that I want to do.
And the last thing I want to do.
Is do something that is boring.
And do something that is boring.
And technically really frustrating.
And technically really frustrating.
Which causes me to waste a whole bunch of time.
Which causes me to waste a whole bunch of time.
So now I'm wasting time.
Now I'm wasting time.
On something I don't even enjoy.
On something I don't even enjoy.
But I also recognize the fact.
But I also recognize the fact.
The information.
The information.
That I think is boring.
That I think is boring.
Is actually really essential for my audience.
It's really essential for my audience.
Because they don't see me posting it over and over again.
They don't see me posting it over and over again.
They might only see it occasionally.
Only occasionally they see it.
And I think about this all the time.
And I think about this all the time.
And they only think about it some of the time.
And they only think about it some of the time.
So it's much less boring to them.
So it's much less boring to them.
So I recognize the fact.
I recognize the fact.
That if I do this in a regular way.
That if I do this in a regular way.
It's useful for them.
It's useful for them.
And I can find time.
And I can find time.
To learn and explore.
To learn and explore.
The things that are useful for me.
The things that are useful for me.
Great. Tap on the collarbone. Take a nice big deep breath. Okay. Once again, I want you to tune back in to posting things online. Mm-hmm. And how does it feel now?
It feels like I've taken the focus off what ticks me off and onto what is helpful to them. And that feels easier.
Great. Awesome. So as you tap on the collarbone, just appreciate the fact that there's a part of you that doesn't want you to be wasting time.
There is a part of me that doesn't want to be wasting time.
And it's possible for me to see the big picture as well.
And it is possible for me to see the big picture.
Great. Deep breath. Now, if this was a client session, John D. and I would be diving in and we'd be going a lot deeper. We'd probably do this recursively a bunch more times, and I would have her imagining more types of posts just so we get an opportunity to do that. So what I'm going to do, again, because I want to be really respectful of time and I want you guys to get a chance to do this. In just a moment, I am going to send you off into 40 groups, which means that you are going to randomly end up in a group of 2, 3, or 4 people. I'm going to give you 7 minutes to play in that group, which probably means that not everybody is going to get a chance to lead the exercise, but I want someone to volunteer to try, and I want someone to volunteer to lead, and I want the other two people or one person in there to watch and kind of experience it. The reason why I had you print out the sheet is so you can just literally, if you need to look down, go, hey, step one, we're going to do this. Step two, we're going to do this. And you saw that I just went through it naturally because I've kind of internalized the process, but have the worksheet there. Give it a try. I want you to be 65% successful so that when we come back on the other side, we're going to get a chance to answer questions so you can be more efficient with that particular procedure. So, okay, it looks like everybody has made it back into the big room. All right, so we only have a couple of moments left, so I just want to share a couple of things with you before we get on our way, and John D. can move us into the next break. The first thing is, when we're doing parts work, the question, is it real? What's important to remember is the language of the subconscious mind is metaphor. So there's a difference between something happening and something being true. All of the stories I tell from stage are true, and many of them have actually happened, meaning that there's truth contained in the story. The metaphor that is bringing for information is telling us true information, even if isn't happening. So the information that comes from a process like this doesn't mean that it has happened. We are not recovering repressed memories. Okay, this is a metaphor. It is possible that it is telling us something that is actual and true. And it's also possible it's telling us an interpretation. It's giving us useful information. You know, oftentimes the question comes up about past life regression, and I'm agnostic on making a statement on that. But if the number of clients that I have worked with who have regressed back to a witch that was burned in the 1700s in New England of the United States, you would believe that the only power source of energy at the turn of the revolution was witches being burned. It's a really perfect metaphor. It says, who I am and how I exist is not safe in the community that I am around. So is that something that happened? Is it not? I don't know. But it is a really useful piece of information because it's clearly telling us a story about what is going on. This is from the end of Harry Potter. Harry thinks he has died. He has gone to some afterworld. And Dumbledore has died a year earlier. Spoiler alert. Sorry. Book that's 2 decades old. And he says, is this real after their conversation? Is this real or is it just happening inside of my head? Of course it's happening inside of your head, Harry. But why should it mean it's not real? Just because it may or may not be part of our history, doing an experience like this is a really useful way for us to get information. So, Tapping Q&A podcast, over 477 pieces of information waiting there. If you go to the website, there's an offer there. I'm offering 279 Tap-Along audios that you can use. If you have an email question, if you have a question, you can always email me. I'm always glad to share any sort of information. Thank you very much for traveling with me through this very rapid journey into parts mediation. So, John D., if you would like to transition us into what is next, you're more than welcome to do that.
I would. I would just like to say thank you so much. And if you haven't had the sublime experience of going to Gene's Tapping Q&A site and seeing all the things that he has there, well, you're behind the times and you need to go. That's all I got to say about that.